This content is AI-generated for informational purposes only and should not be directly used for clinical decision-making.
Hello, and welcome back to the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. I'm Dr. Aris, Senior Attending Neurosurgeon.
And I'm Dr. Alara, Research Fellow. Today, we're looking at a fascinating new study from the journal Neurosurgery, set for the June 2026 issue. It's titled, Changes in the Cervical Range of Motion and Clinical Outcomes After Laminectomy with Fusion for Ossification of the Posterior Longitudinal Ligament, Impact of K-Line and OPLL Subtypes.
This is a timely paper, Ilara. We've been debating the best approach for multi-segment OPLL for decades. While laminectomy alone carries that high risk of postoperative segmental cervical kyphosis, and laminoplasty sometimes struggles with persistent osteophyte progression, laminectomy with instrumented fusion, or LF, has really emerged as a stabilizing powerhouse.
Exactly. And this study, coming out of the Chinese PLA General Hospital in Beijing, specifically looks at how baseline sagittal alignment, the K-line, and OPLL subtypes affect those clinical outcomes. They retrospectively analyzed 133 patients with a mean follow-up of 28.8 months.
For the residents listening, let's set the stage. The K-line is that line connecting the midpoints of the spinal canal at C2 and C7 on a lateral radiograph. If the OPLL mass crosses that line, we call it K-line negative, which traditionally suggests poor outcomes for posterior decompression because the cord can't drift back away from the compression.
Right, and that's why this study is so relevant. They included patients who had LF, specifically instrumented fusion, which some institutions are now using as a standard even for those tricky K-line negative cases. Their inclusion criteria were strict. They needed complete imaging pre-op, immediately post-op, and at the 24-month mark. They even excluded anyone whose lower instrumented vertebra went down to T1 or lower to keep the ROM data focused on the cervical spine itself.
Let's get into the meat of the results. What did the clinical outcomes look like across the board?
Across all 133 patients, the neurological improvement was significant. The mean Japanese Orthopedic Association, or JOA score, improved from 9.2 preoperatively to 12.8 at follow-up. That's a p-value less than 0.001, and more importantly, it exceeded the minimum clinically important difference, or MCID.
That's a solid recovery. But what happened to their alignment? We know fusion restricts motion by design.
That's where it gets interesting. They saw an increase in the CSVA, the cervical sagittal vertical axis, from 22.8 millimeters to 27.2 millimeters postoperatively. However, despite that increase in SVA and the expected reduction in total range of motion due to the fusion, the neurological function still improved significantly.
Let's dive deeper into the K-line subgroups. This is usually where we see the most trouble in K-line negative patients. What did the paper find when they split the cohort?
They had 35 K-line negative patients and 98 K-line positive patients. The K-line negative group actually presented with significantly more MRI signal changes, 97.1% compared to 72.4% in the K-line positive group. They also had lower preoperative C27 angles, meaning they were already starting with a more straight or kyphotic tending neck.
That 97% signal change rate in the K-line negative group is striking. It speaks to the severity of the cord compression in those patients. But did that translate to a worse outcome after fusion?
Surprisingly, no. The study found that LF significantly improved neurological function regardless of K-line status. Even though the K-line negative patients had those morphological differences and more significant cord signals at baseline, their JOA score recovery was comparable to the K-line positive group.
That's a powerful argument for LF. It suggests that if you achieve sufficient decompression and the fusion provides that stability, the drift back theory might be less critical than we once thought in the context of a rigid construct. Now, what about the OPLL subtypes? They looked at continuous, segmental, and mixed types, right?
Yes. They found that the subtypes differed significantly in their flexion angles and overall range of motion. Specifically, the continuous type of OPLL showed a postoperative lordotic shift. While other types might lose lordosis or stay neutral, the continuous OPLL patients actually saw a shift toward a more lordotic C27 angle, moving from about 11 degrees to nearly 16 degrees.
That's a bit counterintuitive. You'd think a continuous block of bone would be the most rigid. Why do they think that lordotic shift happened?
The authors hypothesize that in continuous OPLL, the K-line negative status and the rigid nature of the ossification impair the usual compensation mechanisms, like using ROM or adjusting lordosis to protect the cord. Once you perform the laminectomy and fix them in a rigid, lordotic position, you're essentially providing the stability and space the body couldn't create for itself.
Interesting. Now, did they find any specific predictors for who would do best? Any logistic regression data?
They actually found that no baseline predictors, not the K-line, not the OPLL subtype, nor the preoperative sagittal alignment, significantly influenced the JOA score recovery. As long as the surgical decompression was sufficient, these morphological factors didn't predict the 2-year clinical outcome.
That's a very bold conclusion, Ilara. It almost sounds like we can stop worrying about the K-line if we are planning a fusion.
Well, the paper is careful to say that these morphological differences exist, but they don't necessarily limit the potential for recovery if you use LF. They noted that K-line negative patients might have a worse baseline, but their improvement after surgery is still robust.
We should talk about the ROM, too. For residents and fellows, preserving motion is always the goal, but here we are intentionally taking it away with fusion. How much motion did these patients actually lose?
The total ROM decreased significantly, which is expected with instrumented fusion. Preoperatively, the mean ROM was about 32 degrees, and it dropped to about 24 degrees. But the key takeaway from the paper is that this loss of motion didn't negatively impact the myelopathy recovery in the short term, meaning out to 2 years.
It's the classic trade-off, stability and decompression versus mobility. In OPLL, where the disease is progressive and the ligament is unstable, stability often wins. Did the authors mention any limitations?
Of course. It's a retrospective study from a single center. And while 28 months is a decent follow-up, it's not long-term in the world of spine surgery. We'd want to see if that increased CSVA leads to adjacent segment disease 5 or 10 years down the line.
Exactly. That CSVA increase from 22 to 27 millimeters is something to watch. Even though it didn't hurt their JOA scores now, sagittal malalignment is a known tax on the cervical musculature.
One other thing to highlight for our listeners is the mobility assessment score, or MASS, mentioned in the study. They used it to quantify how much of the cervical motion was coming from the segments involved in the OPLL versus the healthy segments. It really emphasizes how OPLL itself already limits motion before we even get into the OR.
That's a great point. Often, these patients have already auto-fused or become very stiff, so the loss of motion from surgery isn't as dramatic as it would be in a patient with simple disc disease.
To summarize the paper's conclusion for everyone, laminectomy with instrumented fusion effectively improves neurological function in OPLL patients, regardless if they are K-line positive or negative, or which OPLL subtype they have. While the continuous type might see a lordotic shift and the K-line negative patients start with more chord signal changes, these factors shouldn't deter us from a posterior fusion approach if we can achieve adequate decompression.
It's a reassuring study for those of us who favor the posterior approach for complex, multi-level cases. It suggests the K-line might be more of a guide for technique, reminding us that simple laminoplasty might fail in K-line negative cases, rather than a contraindication for posterior surgery altogether, provided you add fusion.
Exactly. It's about matching the surgery to the pathology.
Well, that's all the time we have today. Thank you, Dr. Ilara, for walking us through this.
My pleasure.
For our listeners, you can find the full text and the radiographic data in the June 2026 issue of Neurosurgery. I'm Dr. Aris.
And I'm Dr. Ilara. Thanks for listening to the Neurosurgery Hub podcast. We'll see you in the next episode.